Welcome to the Ripple Revolution Podcast. In this podcast, we take a new look at how we think about making a difference with an approach that integrates living an energized life and making the world a better place. My guest today is Byron Katie. As Katie sees it, she has one job: to stop suffering. To do that, she has developed a process called The Work, which she has taught to millions of people over the last 20 years. Her six books include the best-selling Loving What Is, I Need Your Love, Is That True?, and A Thousand Names for Joy. Hello, Katie. Thank you so much for sharing your time with us today. I know so many people have just been profoundly impacted by your work, so it's such a delight to have you here sharing some of those insights with the Ripple Revolution podcast listeners. Before I start in with some questions, I want to put into context why it is that I'm so excited to talk with you. Put it into context of the Ripple Revolution concept. So at the heart of the Ripple Revolution concept is this simple, universally applicable truth, and that is that you are at the starting point for any difference you make in the world. And that means any personal development work we do, whether that's finding peace, whether that's increasing energy, whatever it is, has a direct impact on our potential to make a difference, because it's all this integrated system. So the work that you do has a direct impact, not just on people feeling more peace, people feeling better about their lives, but really ultimately on their potential to make the world a better place. So let's start off talking a little bit about this pesky little thing called reality, and more specifically, kind of how people seem to relate to it, because the people have this wonky relationship so frequently to reality. So how do you see most people relating to reality, and how does that get in their way?
Well, you know, we all, according to what we believe in the moment, we see an object. Let's call that object reality, not ultimate reality, but let's say the object, let's say it's a tree, or even a piece of furniture, it doesn't, or a person, it doesn't matter what the object is. Each of us sees that object differently, so we're each experiencing a different reality. In other words, if I see, let's say someone walks into the room and you and I are there, and you superimpose everything you believe in that moment upon that person, in your quiet, in your mind, you're not speaking, but you, and that gives you an impression of who and what that person is. And then sure. I, on the other hand, have my own. So there are two different realities. And then when we consider what that man is, what he thinks of himself, you know, holding his own identities, then we have three realities, all on the same object. So reality is, for each of us, whatever we're believing in the moment that object to be, or that situation, and, of course, our world. So reality, as you said earlier, you know, it begins with us, each of us individually. So if we don't like the way we see that object, if we don't love everything we think about that object, then we have created, not intentionally, but just out of what we believe, which is an unquestioned mind, because our minds would radically shift if we questioned what we believed. But in the meantime, we're believing our thoughts about that person, that becomes our world. And if we don't love, you know, really, and in your own words, looking at your site, if we're not excited about that object, that person, that situation, that world, then we need to look to our own minds, because what we're creating is a negative if we are believing our negative thoughts. Now, we cannot not believe our thoughts. We either believe them or we question them. There is no other choice. There is no other choice other than maybe an occasional epiphany that shows us differently. But let's say you come up against my belief system, you know, just as a believer, you come, we're two believers, you come up against something I say, and I begin to defend it. Whether you're right or wrong, I begin to defend it. We defend our belief system. So rather than be open-minded, I stick with my reality, you stick with your reality, so we can never find common cause. Until my mind opens or yours does. And as you know, we can disagree and be compatible without negativity. But defense is the first act of war, and that's what we do as believers. If anyone contradicts, we often, you know, defend and then we justify, and that is immediate separation. You know, I'm talking a lot here, Kurt, but...
This is fabulous. I just, I'm just sitting back and soaking it up, so this is perfect. And so what I'm hearing there is there are a couple of different things. One is our own experience of things and the impact that our own experience, or that our, the way that we see things, the reality that we perceive has on our own experience
of
things.
What we believe onto that object.
Correct, right.
Is what
and,
it is to us.
Right. And then the other is really what effect that has out in the world. So it's not just how am I experiencing the world, it's really how is that then impacting the world, and
yes,
and that can be positive or negative.
Yes, exactly.
So the impact then, looking at this, of the idea of how do I see reality, has the impact, if we want to talk about creating ripples and creating a positive impact in the world, really has the potential being more aware of how is it that I perceive my reality and what is it that I believe and what is it that I'm projecting onto things, has the impact to not just make your own life more enjoyable and more rich, but also to have this immensely positive impact out there in the world.
Yes, or less enjoyable and less what we want out in the world, depending
right.
on what we're believing onto that situation in the moment.
Right. Exactly. So related to this, one of the things that you talk about is how we see the world through the stories, and that's really another way of talking about what you're just saying. Could you talk a little bit more about the potential that recognizing that has to change the way that we experience the world and the way that we show up in the world?
Yes, feelings and emotions will immediately alert us to how we're seeing and perceiving and thinking. So if we're having emotions that we don't like, and, you know, whatever that is for us, let's say any kind of a kind of anxiety from on a scale from 1 to 10, let's say, any amount of anxiety, then to immediately consider what we are believing about that given situation of the moment. And then in my world, to just put those concepts on paper. And, of course, I use a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, and that's on thework.com. It's free. Anyone can download it without having to go through anything. You just press print. But to put those, what I'm thinking and believing in that in those moments of anxiety, to recall those if I can't get to a paper right away, but to put those on paper or on my iPhone, whatever, and then to question those thoughts. And, of course, you know, the inquiry I bring is four questions and what I call four questions and turnarounds. We just kind of question what we believe and turn it around. And then it enlightens us, those answers from within us, enlighten us to what's really going on and to the true nature of reality. And in my world, that amazing world I found myself in and have been sharing for these 27 years, is that the universe is friendly. And of course we would feel negative any time we saw anything in another, in a negative way, because it goes against our true nature and the true nature of everything. Now, Greg, I love on your site, you talk about, you know, that the passion for what you, you know, to do what you love, basically, to do what you feel the passion for, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So whatever that is, let's say that's me, whatever that is, that excites me. Okay, that's a very good thing. It excites me in a very good way. So I have a passion about that. Now, how do I accomplish that? You know, if I have a mind that says, this is too tough, I can't do it, those thoughts belong on paper. We can question those because or they won't appreciate what I do or I'm not smart enough, whatever those are, or they didn't like my last presentation, you know, whatever that is, to identify what we're thinking and believing that would cost us our joy and passion. Because when we're believing those thoughts, you know, how do we react when we believe those thoughts? We become frightened. We become tired. We lose our passion. Energy drops. Depression can even step in. And then we say, well, you know, that's just ridiculousness. I'm just going to keep on going. But we have overlooked what could cost us our passion if we don't identify those thoughts and write them down. They could override us. And so for me, I'm interested in peace, as you know. And there's nothing more exciting than peace. It is so underrated. It is not like, it's not what some people might believe it to be. It is entirely exciting. So much energy is in that space. And, you know, we're left with kind of a state of gratitude and how can I serve? How can I help? And then that fuels the excitement and passion. And we're not tired at night. We may be sleepy, not tired. In fact, we're just not tired.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit more about what it is that you mean when you say, when you talk about peace?
Peace is, how can I help and a state of gratitude that I'm not suffering and that state of anxiety that would hold me back or any state of suffering whatsoever. And anything that would shift that, we just look to our minds and identify it and question it, you know, do inquiry with it. And again, those answers inside of us wake us up, enlighten us to a better world every time. We become wiser, kinder human beings the more enlightened we become. You know, we actually enter a whole new paradigm, a paradigm of passion and service. And, you know, we begin to see, you know, in this clarity that inquiry can bring, that everything we need to do is right here, right now. It's not later. It's not in the future. It's right here. And so we're always fulfilled because we're always accomplishing something. It doesn't matter if it's a phone call or doing the dishes or getting dressed or speaking to 1,000 people or 2,000 people. It's one is just as effortless as the other because we're not in a frightened, anxiety-ridden state of mind. There's nothing to stop us. For me, Kurt, that's peace, the absence of suffering, the absence of fear.
Excellent. So one of the things that in this Ripple Revolution idea that I talk about is something that I describe as ripple enhancers and ripple blockers. And so the ripple enhancers are anything that A, makes you more inclined to create positive ripples, or B, makes the positive ripples that you create out in the world more effective, larger, et cetera. And then the ripple blockers are kind of the opposite of that, what's getting in the way. And so it strikes me that as we're talking about this, one of the things that this is really doing is about shifting you out of that ripple blocking phase, which is the fear and all of that you're talking about, into a ripple enhancement phase, which is
because
peace that you're talking about.
Yes, and the ripple enhancement is, you know, that's natural to all of us. That's where our passion lies. But the one that blocks, you know, let's do something about it. And of course, that's my job in the world to somehow invite people to what is simple, and then leave. You know, each time we're left as wiser, kinder, out of that piece.
Oh, excellent. And what struck me there that you just said is finding that, and I paraphrase, but finding that place that's simple. And there's so many layers of story and whatever it is that we so frequently put onto things that it becomes very complex.
Yes, and to keep it really simple, it's just to work with the negative ways of seeing, you know, to identify those thoughts and to question that. And again, that Judge and Neighbor worksheet, it collects a whole story, like a whole segment in just a few words. It keeps very simple what we are believing that would cost us our passion.
Right. Could you, for the sake of the listeners that aren't familiar with the steps in the work, could you just take us through what that looks like?
Mm-hmm. For example, maybe we'll work with a thought on I can't do it. Okay, so I can't do it. Is it true? And you know, I'm going to put this the other way, Kurt, for your listeners. So find a situation where you had the thought I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the first question, you can't do it. Is it true? The second question, you can't do it. Can you really know that it's true that you can't do it? And with all four of these questions, of course, Kurt, it's we contemplate those questions and we stop using what we've been taught in the world and we just listen to something that knows, because we're tapping in and allowing the wisdom inside of us to meet those questions. So we get really still. You know, the work is about mindfulness. It's really meditation as we listen to wisdom. The third question. Notice how you react when you think the thought that you can't do it. Notice what happens when you think that thought. Notice the emotions that happen, and notice, is there any depression? And if you have any addictions, do they come into play in that moment? Notice how you react, what happens when you think that thought, you can't do it. Notice how you treat yourself and other people when you think that thought. So those are the three questions. Is it true? Can you really know that it's true? How do you react when you think the thought? And then the fourth question, who or what would you be without the thought? You can't do it. Who would you be in that, just in that moment, in that situation, without the thought, I can't do it? And then to witness that from outside of yourself and just notice. Just notice. And then I invite you to turn it around. The work is four questions and turn around. So I can't do it, turned around. I can do it. Now find an example in that situation, an example where you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then another. And then another. You know, I can do it. There's so many, you know, if I'm sitting here believing I can't do it, turned around, I can do it. Okay, an example. Okay, I could stand up. It still doesn't mean I can't do it, but I could stand up. I'm getting closer to it. Okay, I just dialed the number. Okay, I can do that. Okay, I can do it. And I've already seen I can't do it. Can I really know that that's true? No, I haven't tried. So you see how the work carries you all the way through. It even gives you, that internal even gives you directions on how to do it. Now, as you just enlighten yourself in this process with just one simple concept, it can change your entire life, and you could never believe that concept again. But when you're doing the work, in other words, this inquiry, what happens is it propels you into life, it propels you into success. It propels you into, this energy, this energy and peace that we've been discussing here in our time together, and you know, happiness is our birthright, and only what we're thinking and believing costs us that birthright. But once we question it, you know, everything changes. So I can't do it. Turned around, I can do it. Okay, so let's test it. And for all of you that have been afraid to accomplish that thing that you have passion for, you know, continue to find those examples and then just to do one step at a time. The worst thing that could happen is that you failed, which puts you in the position you're in right now anyway, so you have nothing to lose. Oh, what an exciting life to just take one step at a time, as these examples of your turnaround show you the way. And anything that you fear along the way, again, you know, this Judge Your Neighbor worksheet on thework.com, or just to write the, you know, also, Kurt, I have, there are apps on, you know, for all of all the devices that really support people. But if you can't do anything else, those four questions also are on the website. They're free. You don't have to buy anything. It's all yours. And anything I have of value, as you know, Kurt, it's up there at no charge. And, you know, and I don't call it the work for nothing. You know, it does take stillness.
Right.
And it's so simple, and it does take stillness. You know, what's difficult about being still is what we're thinking and believing that would keep us from being still. So just to notice.
Right, which then sparks off, sparks off a whole new series of stories about, you know, not being able to, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And that's why it's so important to write it down. So you just work with the thing. Notice your mind goes way away, and then just come back to the concept you've written down. And just stay with it and be patient, and eventually it becomes so simple. And it's really, you know, it's always a simple process, but for those of us with very, very busy minds, you know, we just, oh, I don't have time for this. And so I would question that, because, you know, the ego, the way that it works, if I believe the thought, I don't have time for this, you know, the ego gets to, it rules. And I am stuck with that identity of I don't have time for this. And so I am stuck with the identity that continues to fail in my own estimation. However, you know, none of us are failing. We're all doing the best that we can of that, I'm sure.
Excellent, excellent. And, you know, there's a quote that of yours that I frequently pull out as I'm talking to people, and that is, when I argue with reality, I lose, but only 100% of the time.
Yes, yes, so true. You know, because it doesn't matter what we are thinking and believing, life does go on, it seems.
Regardless.
And I love that, because, you know, it rules, and it's more powerful than what we're thinking and believing. And so inquiry is about catching up with that and loving it and being excited about it. There is the most beautiful thing in the world going on. I mean, in every given moment, just it's so full. But when we're caught up in what we're thinking and believing and the images in our head, we have no idea this paradise that we've missed until we our minds are clear enough to begin to notice.
Right. And what is so powerful to me about all of this is in working with people. So for the last dozen years, I've been working with people and helping them figure out what lights me up, what difference do I feel called to make, and how do I really create a life based on all of that, a career and a life based on that. And this issue of what people believe and how people see things comes up, of course, frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so frequently has nothing to do with what really is. Mm-hmm. And so it's what I see really being created in what it is that you're talking about is this huge doorway into something that is infinitely less limiting.
Yes, yes, certainly true.
That's excellent.
Certainly true.
One of the things that, it's all wonderful, effective, inspiring ideas, my guess is that people have no end of creative ways to get in the way of the process and to resist the process. Do you have any thoughts on, just from what you've seen, what are the danger zones, and how do people get in their own way, and how can they be aware of that and counter that?
Well, you know, emotions, again, that's the first little temple bell that goes off inside of us. And when we're dealing with those emotions, we try to override them. We try to shift what we're doing. We try everything to in the attempt to handle these emotions. But for me, that was just putting it off. I had to look at what created them in the first place, because that's what stops me in my life. So I would identify what I was thinking and believing, write it down, question what I was believing. Then I began to notice that nothing was holding me back. And, you know, Kurt, when I say nothing was holding me back, I'm really serious. I would question anything that would hold me back. Because to be held back from the world is, you know, that is separation, and I am the cause. So, you know, just as a humane being, I've got to take care of that. And as you say yourself, you know, that has to be taken care of from the inside, so that we can operate out of that and have these productive, happy lives, successful lives. You know, for me, happiness is, you know, that's the greatest success. And, you know, under all circumstances, it doesn't matter if we're rich or poor, or if we have a healthy body or an unhealthy body. You know, happiness is our birthright, and the requirements are not physical. It's internal, you know, and in my simple language, what we're thinking and believing. The effect of that is a happy life or an unhappy life, or a frustrated life, and a life that is lived, you know, just effortlessly.
Right. Yeah, and it's amazing to me, and I've experienced it personally any number of times, and experienced not having it happen, what a shift it is, and how suddenly it's a completely different reality, but nothing's really happened. It's just this little, oh, hang on.
Yeah, it happened.
There's this
inside.
Different way. Right,
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
You saw something else.
Exactly.
You saw something else, and the whole thing changes.
Exactly. So I have a million questions that I want to ask, but in keeping with the format here, I'm going to wind down towards the end. The last thing that I want to ask you, and you started talking about this a little bit earlier on, is with the work that you do and the work that you're doing in the world, what do you love about that, and what inspires you about doing this and the impact that you're making, et cetera?
You know, the end of suffering excites me, and I think what excites me most is to see, you know, to be with people that have believed something all their life, and then to watch it just pop in just minutes, sometimes seconds. That's exciting, just to see that our suffering comes from what we're thinking and believing, and witness that over and over and over and over again. And the privilege of doing like these live webcasts that I do with hundreds of people online, and always knowing that with Inquire we all get to witness the simplicity of this thing, and just watching shifts us. And also on my greatest passion, I think, is the 9-day school for the work, where I get to sit with people for 9 days in this internal process that is so, and it's so exciting, and to watch them when they go home, they're able to hold it, and there's nothing they can do not to hold that kind of freedom, because they no longer believe what they believed, you know, that negative thinking. So, you know, that's what excites me about my passion, is having not one fearful thought about what I love. And that I would love everyone. You know, we can have that as in any occupation we choose, any occupation that we're in the moment. We think we hate it, but what if we didn't believe? What if we didn't believe those negative thoughts about the job we have right now? There would be the passion. There would be the service. There would be the shifts and change. And in that kind of atmosphere, it shoots out like some kind of like explosion. And it just takes us to unlimited circumstances in our life that we can always handle, that is not frightening. And we can be used by the universe for what is beautiful at our fullest capacity. But if I think this is not the job, well, I'm going to take that mindset to my next job. So I'm going to be as handicapped there as I am here, or at least in some in many ways. So to love what is. And let the universe just take us. And the way that it takes us, in my experience, is it gives. But our minds are open enough, and our eyes are open enough as a result to see the gifts and to say yes to them, rather than to fear them and keep them away.
Right. Wow. Yeah. And what, as you're talking about that, what's really resonating for me there is just the degree to which it all opens up so much space, and how most of the time, so many of us, myself included, of course, in this, operate from this artificially constrained and tight kind of place that is all made up.
Mm-hmm. It's all made up. But you can't teach that to the ego. The ego believes what it thinks, you know, and so I see the ego as a child, as just an innocent child, and then to take its thought system, you know, just to respect it, to put it down on paper, and to question it. The ego, you know, I see it as just this helpless little entity, this child, immature child, just looking for a home, and as we question that ego, it begins to mature, and maturity is another way of saying fearless.
Excellent. Excellent. The last thing, is there a website where people can find out more about these workshops, et cetera, that you are doing?
Yes, thework.com.
Okay.
Or ByronKatie.com. You know, either one will get you to the site.
Excellent. Well, this has been a completely inspiring conversation. I've really enjoyed it. I really appreciate your time and really appreciate the work that you're doing out in the world. So thank you very much. And on behalf of the Ripple Revolution podcast listeners, thank you as well.
Thank you, Kurt.